You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Now it's time to hear from the Green Party's Ricardo Menendez March.
The government recently announced that they would be introducing a traffic light sanction system for people on the Job Seeker Support Benefit who did not fulfill their obligations as beneficiaries. This includes a green level for compliant beneficiaries and an orange and red level for beneficiaries who haven't met their obligations and who may face sanctions. For our weekly catch-up, I spoke to Green Party MP Ricardo Menendez March to discuss his thoughts on the newly introduced sanctions. We also had a chat about job cuts at the Environmental Protection Agency and the party's petition calling for Simeon Brown's speed limit increases to be rolled back.
What was your reaction to the government's introduction of these new sanctions for beneficiaries?
Well, look, it shows the government does not have ending poverty as a priority. At the same time, they're watering down child poverty targets and cutting thousands of jobs. They're introducing more ways to punish beneficiaries. We know these sanctions don't actually help people into employment, and all they'll do is push more people into hardship.
What kind of an impact do you expect these changes to have on beneficiaries and low-income people in Aotearoa?
Well, look, if you strip someone's income when they're already struggling to pay bills on a weekly basis, you're putting them at risk of homelessness, of having to move around, to have to spend hours at food banks just to make ends meet. And like I said, these work obligations have not been shown to work to actually help people into employment. And in many areas, there are way less job advertisements than there are people on the benefits. So it seems particularly cruel to double down on sanctions when we're facing higher unemployment and less jobs being available.
What's your take on the mandatory community work programs that beneficiaries in the red level are required to attend?
Work for the Dole schemes haven't worked. They've been tried in the 90s and they did not result in people entering permanent employment. All it does is actually it locks people into unpaid labor, which is really counterproductive to what we're trying to do, which is to support people who need work into jobs that pay good wages. So it'll just continue punishing people into hardship and not actually supporting people to meet their aspirations. What we want is an income support system that lifts people above the poverty line and actually tailored employment support systems that match people's skills and aspirations with jobs rather than benefit sanctions.
Do you think that the compulsory work seminars that were announced earlier in May this year are an effective medium for beneficiaries to find employment?
No, they're not. And there is no evidence that those kind of work seminars actually help people in employment. In fact, MSD doesn't even record the outcomes of those work seminars. So they actually, at national level, so they actually don't understand and they don't even know what happens to people. And they don't have good mechanisms to track what happens to them. So this is just more blunt tools being used by the government to make themselves look tough on beneficiaries when we should be tough on poverty and lifting benefit levels so that everybody can make ends meet, which then unlocks people being able to find jobs that match their skills and aspirations or to, you know, raise a child in a way that works for parents rather than locking people into specific outcomes.
Lastly, Christopher Luxon has defended the new sanctions by saying that the obligations for beneficiaries are simple and that all that's required of them is to begin the process of looking for work and meet with case managers and that they wouldn't get sanctioned if they couldn't find jobs. How would you respond to that?
Unlike Christopher Luxon, I have worked with beneficiaries in the past, and I talk to people on the benefit regularly as part of my work. He was unable to actually even substantiate how much someone the benefit earns and acknowledge he hasn't spoken to a single beneficiary in relationship to these changes. So I think Christopher Luxon's out of touch with the policies that he's introducing, and it just really shows because none of these policies have worked. And for example, compulsory money management, which is another thing that's been introduced, hasn't worked in Australia, and there's actually plenty of research to show that the introduction of such policies in Australia actually caused more harm and hardship for the people that it was imposed on.
All right, moving on to the next area we'll be covering. Last week, the government announced that 169 jobs would be cut at the government's Environmental Watchdog and Justice Ministry, resulting in 42 jobs being cut at the Environmental Protection Agency, which is about 16% of the agency's workforce. What's your reaction to this?
Well, I think it's terrible that the government continues cutting jobs and leaving people jobless. but particularly as we're dealing with a climate crisis, it feels particularly irresponsible to undermine our scientific efforts to prepare us to better adapt to more extreme weather events and to protect our natural environment. Ultimately, what this will result in is the government having less information to make good decisions in relationship to protecting our environment. But it is no surprise the government is not interested in protecting our natural environment when they are pushing ahead with allowing coal mines and conservation land and reopening oil and gas exploration.
Alongside job cuts at agencies like the Department of Conservation, the Ministry for the Environment, and the Climate Change Commission, what impacts do you think the cuts at the Environmental Protection Agency will have?
Well, I mean, it will undermine our ability to prepare for extreme weather events, for example, and that's actually a really, really concerning thing. And again, at the end of the day, when we're already facing a government that's wanting to undermine our natural environment, these scientists who are working at the front line are key to actually giving us good advice so that we make policy based on the best available evidence rather than vibes. And ultimately, we're also condemning a whole generation of scientists with no ability to find work in New Zealand and leaving them with no option but to move overseas. And it's a real loss of talent that will ultimately leave us and our environment worse for it.
Lastly, the Green Party recently launched a petition calling for the government to roll back on their proposed speed limit increases. Would you like to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, look, we know that safe speeds can save lives. And we've seen how even here in Tamaki Makaurau, students from the Mount Albert area rallied and put petitions to have better walking as infrastructure because it just wasn't safe for young people to walk on their streets and cross the streets during school hours. And so having the ability for people to feel safe when crossing the roads and in the street is really critical, and it literally saves lives. The problem that we have right now is that we've got a Minister of Transport that is raising speed limits without any credible argument, and applying those blanket speed limit increases will literally lead to more deaths and serious injuries and will likely save only a few seconds in travel time for commuters. So we're putting our young people, our elderly, disabled people particularly, at risk of more accidents on the road, and that's just irresponsible.
It's been a month since the speed limits had been increased. What are some of the impacts that we can see as a result of that?
Well, some of the impacts that we're going to see will be cumulative and will compound down the line when we start seeing higher rates of accidents and deaths on the road. But we already have seen really high rates of accidents on the road prior to the limits on speed limits. And so, I mean, one really good example is in the South Island, that there was an 80% reduction in deaths and serious injuries from the safer speed limits that were put between Nelson and Blenheim. And that had only been going around for a couple of years. So we've already made some traction from putting safer speed limits on reducing deaths and serious injuries, and the government should not be winding those back. So we encourage people to go to our website and sign on to a petition to send a message that we do want safer roads. And if people want faster commuting times, the best way to achieve that is by investing in things like rail and public transport to free up the roads for people who still need to drive to get to places like work and schools.
And how would you respond to the Transport Minister's statements saying that the previous speed limits slowed the economy?
I mean, it's just nonsense, right? I mean, we've got a government that continues to refuse to invest in the things that we know will allow goods and services to be moved more quickly, such as better rail infrastructure, including for freight and interregional rail. Those are the things that we know could really speed up our economy, connect people and to each other, and better transport goods and services. So I think this is just the Transport Minister leaning on issues like culture wars that have gone overseas in relationship to transport issues rather than following the best evidence, which is that we should be investing in better transport infrastructure such as public transport and rail, and putting speed limits that save lives rather than undermine them.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.